Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Swinging a high drive into center field, hits at the wall, it is gone! Passes, does it again. It's gone! It's into the bullpen! This game is tied!
He swings and rips one to center field. It's high, it's deep, it's back, it's gone! Sale winds, he fires. Swing and a miss, strike three, it's over!
Welcome back to Play Tessie. It is episode 70. If you're listening on drop day, it's May 6th. This one's for you, Ryan Kalish, legendary number 70 for the Red Sox. One of our favorites. I know Sammy loves Ryan Kalish. Yeah, you sure do. Here with Sammy. Pat is out today. So Joe Braverman producing for us, but he's back in the saddle for another one with us today. Wearing a different hat today. So you gotta wear the
hat. He doesn't have a hat on, actually.
Yeah, you gotta wear the Pat Brown hat, though. That's you got to change your voice now. You got to be like a whole different person.
Okay, well, I'll try and sound like I went through puberty then, and just be really smart about my body parts.
You got to do the pregnant pause thing that Pat does, where he goes, "You know who's," or he'll say something like, "You know who I want to see at the plate? Baseball player."
This is the official podcast of not blowing 3-1 leads in back-to-back years. Praise be. Also known as the official Red Sox podcast of WEEI. Remember, before we get going here, hit that subscribe button. If you're on the Apple, Spotify, or Odyssey apps, hit that subscribe button. Rate us 5 stars. Check us out on YouTube. Hit that thumbs up there. We're on the WEEI page. We've got our own playlist. It's a vibe. Sox are a vibe because they won the last game of the series. Did drop 2 out of 3, did ride a little bit of a 3-game losing streak where they just weren't really hitting the ball. By the way, before we get going again, socials at Play Tessie on Twitter and Instagram. We continue to drop awesome content on those socials every single day. So you don't want to miss it. Follow us there. Lots of content with Red Sox players, both of the present and of the future. Lots of cool clips from the shows as well. So definitely be sure to check those out. But yeah, Sox dropped 2 out of 3, but I don't think the vibes are down because they just took it to the Minnesota Twins coming off 12 straight wins on their end and beat them 9-2 today. We're going to try to go in order and like cover the bad stuff and talk through the bad stuff before we get to the good stuff. But it's hard to not feel a little bit better than we could have coming. Like this could have been drop 4 in a row coming off a sweep to the Twins, and we all predicted like 2 out of 3s, and I think Pat even predicted a sweep. Like, we were feeling pretty good, and to come on following a sweep would have been pretty tough. But good to see them get a win today. Not just a win, but a pretty convincing win. Everyone kind of contributed. Cooper Criswell looking great again. But again, guys, vibe check before I guess we go back to game one. Sammy, where are your vibes at right now? I know we talked, yesterday on the radio, but in the 28 or whatever hours since then, vibe check on your end.
My vibes are, they're fine. Not really too high, too low. Like you said, you lose the series, never good. But if you are only going to win one game, I think the last one's the best one to win. Now they get a happy off day tomorrow, heading into that quick series with Atlanta. That's a tough opponent. So, yeah, good, but not great vibes, I'd say.
Joe Braverman from the WEI Studios. Vibes. What do you got?
I would say pretty much the same as where they were at the beginning of the year. I mean, I totally underrated the Twins, and that's on me because I just saw 7 out of their 10 straight wins against the White Sox and saw that as kind of fraudulent. But they came out, their starting pitching was phenomenal. I would say probably one of the most underrated rotations out there in the bigs right now. And the Sox are just an inconsistent lineup offensively. You know, they're going to have those waves where Friday, I mean, going back to the last game against the Giants, it was down and it was down up until today's game. And they finally took advantage of it. The bats came alive. So I would say it's right in the middle. I mean, they're going to lose some series now and again. You know, they're going to be to some really bad teams or really good teams. So I'm kind of indifferent, kind of similar to you guys. I'm like right in the middle still because it's still kind of early.
Yeah. I think this is probably going to be something that's going to happen all year long. The inconsistencies with offense, I mean, they lead the league in strikeouts. So anytime you're striking out at that rate, there's always going to be some semblance of inconsistency. So I think I would say expect them to be consistently inconsistent with the offense. Nothing really new.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing new because this is what we've seen for a couple of years now with this team. I mean, we rode this wave all last season. I mean, we would see them rattle off 3-4 wins in a row, win 7 out of 10, and you're feeling really good. And then the second you acknowledge that you're feeling really good, that's when they drop 4 out of 5, 3 in a row, something like that. So we've talked about this. This is kind of going to be the wave you have to ride with this team for the reason you just said, Sammy. But yeah, you saw it in the first game. Tanner Houck was really good. I mean, you wouldn't know it looking at the box score because he ended up going 6 innings, 4 runs, but he looked again like an ace. But the story of the game for me was the inconsistent offense. You had Chris Paddock, who is had, I would say, an up and down season at best, where he's looked, where he's had starts where he, like we talked about this in the preview, where he had like a 7 scoreless 2 outings ago, but I mean, the ERA was in the high fives and this kind of felt like the most winnable game of the bunch.
He had a lot of hype with him. I remember coming up, had a lot of hype with him and it's kind of tampered off a little bit.
Yeah.
Now you're only getting flashes.
Well, he was a stud. And then what he was traded for, was it Rogers? Was it like Taylor Rogers? He was traded to the Twins for from the Padres. I mean, yeah, he was a stud prospect, but then he got hurt. Tommy John coming back from that, like, but the second game was Pablo Lopez, third game Joe Ryan, and not to mention the Red Sox going with a bullpen game in the second game and Criswell in the third. So you have to feel probably the best about Houck versus Paddock. And when they start off the game with Duran reaching on an error and Devers doubling to get him over to third, so you got second and third, no outs, and Tyler O'Neill up and Abreu on deck and Garrett Cooper in the hole, you feel pretty good about getting at least one, but probably 2 home, but they didn't get any home. And that game kind of sat low scoring for a while because Paddock was dealing, Houck was dealing. I guess the other thing there is Grissom. I guess maybe let's just go on a tangent a little bit here because we've been kind of waiting for the Vaughn Grissom debut for a little while. And there was some ups and downs. I don't know. Like, not a ton noteworthy about it, but like, I don't know, Sammy, you saw Vaughn Grissom. I know we talked a little bit about it both on the radio and in the car driving to and from radio, but what were your takeaways from Grissom, seeing him for the first time playing regular season games for the Sox?
Okay. Well, positive wise, I think he looks good at the plate for a guy who hasn't really seen major league pitching in a while. It's coming off a few injuries and some sickness. So that's good. Had a nice double off the wall today. I believe there's 6 or 7 ballparks where that's out. Friend of the program, Gabriel Starr, tweeted that out. We can check later. But it was good to see him hit a ball hard like that. But I would be remiss if I didn't mention the defense. Now, no big mistakes, But if you've played baseball or watched baseball for a long time, and you see him, Vaughn Grissom, make that throw from second to first, especially in the first game, it really stood out to me. Looked very, very uncomfortable, almost to the point, and Gordo, we discussed this, where it looked like he had the yips almost, because it's such, as far as throws go for an infielder, there is no easier throw. Ground ball to second, throw to first. It's the shortest throw, simple, and he looked like big extension on the arm, like almost threw it over Cooper or Smith, whoever was at first in that first game of the series. It just did not look good. I will say, though, today on Sunday as we record, didn't stand out as much to me, so maybe a good thing. Maybe it's just a product of him not getting as many chances, but the first game of the series kind of freaked me out with the defense.
Yeah, and it was interesting really, because I felt like, okay, I don't want to say I felt okay, but you'd watch him turn the double play and like he would make the throw. You'd watch a ground ball get hit to him, he'd throw to first. The throw would get where it needs to go. But it's just watching it, it kind of looks like he's just like a little bit too tall and lanky to play the position.
Yeah. He's big. He's like Bogart's size kind of guy. But and you know what? You kind of made a good point right there. You said it, the double play. I thought that looked fine, which makes me think it is the yips, because you don't have time to think when you're turning a double play. You got to get the ball and throw it. No time to think. But with a ground ball to second, you're just going to first for the one out. Plenty of time to think. That ball is something when it's not hit hard, it feels like it's slowly making its way to you. Then you pick it up. The runner's not even close. You're like, okay, just got to throw to first. This is easy. Why does this feel so hard? What's going on? Ugh. And then, it's a weird feeling. I don't know if either of you have ever dealt with the yips, but I had a really bad case when I was playing high school baseball. And I just remember one day warming up playing catch and just being like, how the fuck do I throw this ball? I can't remember how to do it. My body is just not working. It's weird.
I have the yips with throwing frisbees. I literally for years have not been able to throw a frisbee. It is fucking awful. I cannot. It's ridiculous. I literally can't do it. Can jam? Play can? No, I can't do it. I just won't do it. It's awful. So I don't know if he had like when we were talking yesterday after watching the first game, I was thinking, oh God, like maybe he does, but I don't know. Like the throws look weird, but in the second game again, he only played two games in the series. So the third game, the throws got where they needed to go. He looked fine. I think it's definitely going to be a work in progress. Again, second base is a new position for him. But, yeah, we'll see. At the plate, I thought his approach looked good. I mean, he only had the one hit. But, like, you watch him at the plate, and you definitely – like, there's guys – like, you'll see the results, and the results are going to be the results. But you watch Vaughn Grissom hit, and he looks comfortable. He lets the right pitches go by. He attacks the right pitches. And, again, this is a guy that – he's down 14 pounds from that illness he had. So this is a guy who's going to have to be built back up, not just because these are the first major league games he's playing, not just this year, but he didn't really play in the bigs last year very much.
Yeah. He might take this a while. Go ahead.
It's the first time where he's basically been given the baton and said, this is going to be your position. It's one thing to get that baton and to be the anchor at short, but then to be a big league second base. I mean, a minor league shortstop, big league second base. I mean, even if he had reps at second during spring training, that's still a big adjustment to make from spring training to the majors. And our friends Baseball Savant say that his bat, his double hit six home runs, six ballparks. That's a home run in. So I don't think the bat is going to be an issue. But as you said, defensively, it's still going to take a little bit for him to get used to a new role, new position, new team. And I wouldn't be surprised if it was a case of the yips because of all the new facets for such a young guy.
I'm excited about the bat.
Athletic stance.
That's where I'm at.
I love an athletic batting stance. He looks super, super athletic when he's up there. It's cool to see. Like you, just an athlete, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I know it's like just, it's partially a fact of us not having seen him play this year or for the Red Sox ever, but I am excited watching him hit. I was really excited to watch him come up with the bases loaded in the third game. I'm excited to see more of it. Day off on Monday, so hopefully he gets both Tuesday and Wednesday in the lineup, and then day off Thursday. So we'll see that. Back to the game, though. Hauk, there was some discussion about Cora's decision to leave him in for that last inning. it has felt, it's kind of been three starts in a row where he's looked dominant until that final inning. And I don't want to say it fell apart, because I don't ever think he ever really fell apart, but there was some damage in all three of those final innings. And then this time we'll talk about this particular example here. I thought at first, oh, why are they leaving Halkin? But then thinking a little bit more about it, kind of two back-to-back bullpen days coming up afterward, think you kind of had to push him, even though I think with a full rotation, hopefully they wouldn't have, especially with an off day, actually two off days coming up. That would be the time to push your pen. But you kind of got to ride your guy. Hauk is right now the ace of this team. So I don't know where you guys were at with that, but I changed my opinion on it. I think they were right to ride him, even though it didn't work.
I mean, Hauk's not going to be pitching like absolutely dominant every single start. There's going to be starts where he runs into trouble, and it's still sort of a new adjustment for Hauk, where in the beginning of his career, where he struggled was the third time through the lineup. Now, when you get to the fourth time, is going to be where he's really, really tested. And is he going to be consistent all the time? No, but for a team that's as thin margin in the rotation and in the bullpen as they are, like, another starter can go down and head back to the injured list, which means another bullpen day is going to happen every fifth day. So even if Hauk is struggling, you need to ride him out as much as you can, at least while you're thin like this.
Right. And this is part of the process of him becoming a legitimate major league starting pitcher. He has to be able to work through these things. And whether it works or not in terms of winning the game, it's never going to be the wrong decision to believe in a guy like this in a season where you're kind of, you know, bridge year. We'll see what we got. Develop the young guys. So I feel like 90% of the time this season, I'm going to be in favor of letting Hauk ride it out in situations like that. And we've already had three, like you just said, Gordo. So fair to think that we'll have more situations where Hauk's in the sixth inning at 85 pitches, 90 pitches. And we're thinking, does he go out for the seventh inning? Can he handle it? He's already seen the lineup three times, three and a half times, getting close to four. That's a lot. So yeah, again, I'm with Cora here. I thought it was fine. Results aside, and also, like you said, the bullpen games, that has to be mentioned as well.
Yeah, and it's been that 85 to 90 pitch borderline, but that's another good point from you there, Sammy. It's not even just about understanding what you're going to ask your bullpen to do in the next 2 days, but we've seen so many good things from Tanner Hauk. Him taking that next step is not having that cutoff be at 85 pitches. A lot of these guys have that cutoff where they start to deteriorate at 100 pitches. Some of the better pitchers in the game can go through 100 pitches. And if Hauk is going to look this good, you got to keep pushing him. You got to push him to take that next step, whatever it may be. And we've seen so much good from him that maybe that next step is the whole 90, 95, 100 pitch borderline. Rest of the game, I mean, they put in Uesawa. That was another one that he said, this was a back-to-back for Uesawa. He threw a couple innings in the first game here, and he said that it was the first time he had thrown back-to-back days ever, including high school, which obviously not necessarily ideal, but again, when your bullpen is going to be asked to do what they were going to be asked to do in the second and third game of the series, you got to push guys, and Uesawa, potentially a guy who might go back down when Pivetta's ready to come back, that's a guy that you got to push. And even if it's not something he's done before, it's a major league game, man. It's a major league series. You just got to make it happen.
Was there a little bit of miscommunication there between the Red Sox and Uesawa? Because there's no way, I have to assume there's no way they would put him into back-to-back games. If that's true, he hasn't thrown back-to-back days since, what'd you say, high school or?
No, he'd never even done it in high school. He'd never done it.
Okay, there had to have been some sort of miscommunication.
They didn't know. Here's the thing, Sammy. If you're this is like his first stint in the bigs. If they ask him, can you go today? He's not going to say no.
But they said it after the fact.
I think they asked Uesawa. Like, I think it was literally Pete Abe asked Uesawa the next day, like, about throwing back-to-back days, because Uesawa has been a starter. Uesawa was like, nah, I haven't done it. So I don't know. I'm sure that would be my best guess, is that it never came up. But Weird. At the same time, it's not like nothing against Uwasawa, but you probably care about keeping him fresh less than everyone else on the team.
That's so weird, though. Like, there was no moment, nobody with the Red Sox ever asked, like, how does he do on back-to-back days? When was the last time he was used out of the bullpen? I feel like these are questions that someone should have asked.
Well, a lot of it can be trial by error. They hadn't seen a lot of Uwasawa because they had acquired him, what, a week or two ago? And we'd, like, barely seen him in AAA. And the major league, you know, who's to say that Alex Cora and everyone else up in Boston aren't looking at him for the first time, at least in a major league experience. So they're just kind of throwing him out there, seeing, okay, how well does he do? And as you said, because he's a young guy and he's only up for a cup of coffee, he kind of just has to nod his head and say, yes, sir, and go out and try and do his job.
He's not as young as people think. He's 30. Yeah.
Yeah.
A little over 30. So I don't know. I just found the whole thing
a little strange. Weird.
You know, mistakes happen. Maybe they just didn't know, like you said, Gordo or Joe, like they're getting their first looks at him in person at least. So just thought it was strange. And by the way, get this guy a hat that fits him. Holy crap. He's out there looking like Marvin the Martian with his hat's like two sizes too big. Looks terrible.
Marvin the Martian.
Yeah, Marvin the Martian.
Yeah, no, I know who that is, but why does he look like Marvin the Martian?
Doesn't Marvin the Martian have like a big helmet?
Oh, wait. No, you might be right.
Yeah, Marvin the Martian. He's got that big helmet. Jeez.
Oh, God, you're right. No, you're so right. Why did I think he... Yeah, you're right. I thought he looked like Super Mario, but I think Marvin the Martian's actually better.
Yeah, just like it's a bowl. It's like a bowl on his head. It's way too big. Maybe it's the pitch com, but that's not fitting my narrative. So
No. It's big hat. He's like you know, they sell those like the store, like the giant hats. I need to get one of those.
Yeah. Hey, I got a fun fact for you. Did you know that John Farrell. Hey, there's Marvin.
Hey, Marvin.
Shout out everyone watching on YouTube. You get a look at Marvin the Martian. Did you know that John Farrell wore a size 8 hat?
What?
Huge head. Gigantic skull.
Oh, my God. I think I'm a 7 3/8, and that was like that's only like new. I think my head has grown.
That's been a 7 1/4. I'm like 7 7/8. I have a huge head.
Oh my God, you're making fun of John Farrell. You're basically him.
Actually, no, sorry. I think I'm 7 5/8. But I have a big
okay.
Head. Also, the hair.
Yeah, that's true. You got a lot of hair. Braverman, you got a lot.
Yeah,
of hair.
Same here. Like I can tell when a hat will not fit because when I have this out, but when I get a haircut, it's like, oh, it fits perfectly.
How often do you get a haircut?
I have the ever-changing. Probably every couple of months. Huh. When did I go last? February, I think. So
that's great. Joe, I was literally just talking to a friend about how I'm planning on getting a haircut this week or next, and I'm excited because I have a whole different array of hats that I can wear when I have short hair.
I don't
because
buy
when
it.
I have long hair. Like, and Gordo, you saw this when we were in Fort Myers. I have to stick my head under, like, the shower, wet my hair and put my hat on. Otherwise, it won't fit for the rest
of
the
day. You put your hat on in the shower?
No. I run my hair under the water, dry it, make it so it's flat. Then I put the hat on and I let my hair finish drying with the hat on. Otherwise, it'll fall off or it'll give me a really bad headache.
Sammy, you have been talking about getting a haircut since we were in Fort Myers. I don't believe that you're getting a haircut in the next 1 or 2 weeks.
I got to go to some formal events in the next few weeks. So
Your hand is being forced.
Yeah. Yeah. Got to do it.
I always get the call of, you look so much better clean shaven and with a haircut. And I'm like, I know.
Yeah. Yeah, you do, man. Probably. I've never seen you clean shaven.
Yeah, I've never seen him. I've never seen him with clean shaven.
Like,
short
hair. I don't want to. I like having the grimy ass long hair when we're at Fenway and we're like, we're with baseball players. We're not trying to look
having
pretty.
The hat and the flow in the back will really put you in good graces with ball players.
I know. I don't want to lose it.
I don't know if this was after the first game, before the second game, or after the second game, but Devers, this I think came from the Globe. After Devers' interview broke up, he pointed out, and this is in talking about the Sox offensive woes over at that point, three-ish games. And he had referenced that the Red Sox had made a number of personnel changes in the last week that may have contributed to their mini losing streak. He didn't say names, but the guys that the Red Sox had demoted or DFA'd or whatever from that point, it was losing Bobby Dalbec, Pablo Reyes, and Emmanuel Valdez in favor of Garrett Cooper, Vaughn Grissom, and Dominic Smith.
Can you say it again? What did he say?
He referenced that the Red Sox had made a number of personnel changes and that that might be a reason for their offensive woes.
Oh my fucking God.
But again, it's Bobby, Reyes, and Valdez.
But that was a
Valdez,
real...
Valdez, you can make the excuse. Bobby, no. Bobby and Pablo, wait. Not
so,
there.
Okay, hold on. So this theory is like, let's use who's a random guy on the team. Connor Wong. Connor Wong comes up to the plate. Do we think that he's going, man, I miss Bobby. If he were here,
no, I'd Sammy. That's what's crazy about this is because I think he's literally referencing that. Oh, I miss Valdez, who was hitting 156. I miss Pablo Reyes, who was hitting 183. I don't know. I don't think he was missing Dalbec. I think it's about those guys.
But either way, that's.
No, I thought that was crazy, especially coming from a guy who, and like, granted, I loved when Devers spoke to the media about wanting reinforcements this offseason. I loved that he did that. And now it's like, oh, we're making an effort to upgrade the team. It's like they're trading away these guys because they're selling. They're sending down Valdez because he hasn't hit. They're DFAing Reyes because he hasn't hit and he's not playing good defense. They sent down Bobby because there's a better option out there.
You know what I was thinking? When we were in Fort Myers, I noticed that Reyes, Valdez, and Abreu were kind of hanging out. And Sedan were hanging out. Those four were together a lot. Now they're split up.
Yeah. I mean, you see it with the dance thing. Nesson hasn't been showing it unless I may have been turning on the TV a little bit later, closer to first pitch. So maybe they have been. I just haven't seen it. But Reyes was the king of the dance circle. Valdez was big about the dance circle. I know Joely got in there a few times. He's not here. So we'll see what's... And Yoshida's hurt. He was a big part of the dance circle. I don't know. Is the dance circle still a thing?
Well, Yoshida should not be doing the dance circle. He needs to rest his legs.
Dude, we got on the IL. Doing that hurt his wrist.
The cleats on the pavement, man. It's not good for those calves.
I'm surprised that nobody has tried to blame Yoshida's injured hand on Cora resting him. I love when people do that, where they take two completely unrelated things and then act as if one caused the other. I can't believe it. I really thought that someone would be like, well, maybe if he had more consistent reps, his hand would have been better conditioned. But no.
Oh, yeah.
Red Sox fans for not going, unless somebody has said that, please comment or let one of us know if someone's tried to make that point.
If you want to make an argument as to why Yoshida's wrist injury is Cora's fault for resting him, please put it in our comments, DM us. We want to hear from you. Specifically,
worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Let's move to game two. This game sucked. It started off really great because in a first inning that felt like it wasn't going anywhere, Willy Abreu put together one of the best at-bats we've seen all season. What was it, 10 pitches?
Yeah, I think 10 pitches, some really good takes against a legit ace caliber pitcher. And then he tops it off, goes the other way for a hit.
Yeah, and that put the Sox up 1-0. And you've had to be feeling good. Bernardino let in a run 1-1. And at that point, the Red Sox just like didn't hit ever again.
Well, unearned run. Justice for our guy, Bernardino.
Justice for Bernie. What is he pitched again today. Let me get a quick Bernie ERA check. I'm gonna pull that up because Bernie has, he's so good. I love Bernie. Bernie's current ERA is,
it's gotta be less than like 1.5.
It's 0.64.
Nice. I think if Valdez and Reyes and Dalbec were still on the team, it would be 0.46. Because they're so important to the to making guys feel good. I don't know.
But yeah, Kepler homered off Boozer, and I thought the story of this game was kind of similar to the story of the first game, where it was just missed opportunities. They had at one point David Hamilton, he got on and then he stole second. So they no outs, David Hamilton on second. It's a 2-1 ball game, and you've got Sedan, Duran, and Devers at the plate. This is the type of at bat where Sedan needs to push him over to third, and then Duran needs to figure out a way to get him home, get the ball in play. And then in the end, yeah, Devers with the third at bat with a chance to get him home, and he strikes out. I know there was a rough call in there, and he had a crazy stare down with the ump.
That was sick.
Yeah,
unlike Devers. I feel like that's the most confrontational you'll ever see him, just staring
for a long time too. He Gordo, kept that stare.
I want to back up on Rafaela. I don't really but this year I don't expect the surface numbers to ever really be great. But the thing that really irks me is the situational hitting. And you touched on it just now. Situation like that, putting the ball in play is so, so valuable. And it feels like he has one swing and never really changes it. Like there's no shortening up of the swing. He's always swinging out of his shoes. That's something that probably will change with more reps and more maturity. But right now, it's just so frustrating when he goes up there like a guy on second with nobody out and he's swinging for the fences. Like, man, just hit the ball on the ground. Or bunt. You can even bunt. I hate bunting. But he can bunt in that situation, and I won't even be upset. I don't remember the exact situation from the second game.
So this situation was Hamilton singled, then he stole second. Rafaela gets up. He strikes out.
Okay, then, so exact. Yeah. So pretty much what I described. You just need – just put the ball on the ground. You can even hit the ball to the left side in that situation because you got Hamilton on second. So many different things you could do to get him over to third. But, like – they don't need a home run there, man. They don't need that gamble. So I'm hoping for Rafaela to clean up the situational hitting.
And I think he did that in game three. I'm pretty sure he had a bunt attempt, or it might be another player I'm thinking, but I'm pretty sure he did try and square around a bunt, even though he got out via sacrifice.
Game three in a similar spot, that's where he hit a home run in a very similar spot in game three. Like, Middlebrooks was talking about it, I believe, right before it happened. Or maybe it was the previous at-bat. I don't know. But Middlebrooks was talking about it a little bit, how Sedan needs to shorten up, make sure he gets the ball in play. And I think it's in part because it didn't happen in game two. But that game two spot, fifth inning, it's a 2-1 ball game. Like, that's a big spot. And you've got one of the fastest guys in the league on second base with no outs. And yes, Rafael is the nine man, but you got the 9-1-2 up. Like, that's a guy that's got to score. Like, that's a big inning waiting to happen right there. And it didn't happen. And it wouldn't be the only time that the Red Sox squandered a situation with guys in scoring position this game.
Oh, God. No, it would not be.
Yeah. So after that, let me figure out what inning it was. It was the top seven. Okay. Top seventh. This was kind of the inning of the game. Dom Smith. And by the way, this was my crystal bomb pick, and he was this fucking close to putting me on the board again. That ball almost got out. And then not only did it not get out, goes off the wall, I don't get my crystal bomb, but he gets thrown out at second from the outfield by like 8 steps. So that sucks. All right, Dom didn't get – that killed me. And then that inning, they ended up loading the bases. And it was frustrating because the run would have scored if Dom had just stayed at first. Like, you would have had something going there. By this point, I think it was 3-1. But yeah, it was 3-1 by this point. And you have Devers up with the bases loaded again. Mm. And yeah, he struck out. He had a 3-1 count.
3-1.
Yeah.
And that 3-1 pitch, credit to whoever the hell was pitching for the Twins at that time. But that 3-1 pitch, fucking perfect. So that, fine, spit on it. But to strike out, so frustrating, man. That was one of the more frustrating games of the entire season to this point, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I mean, when you've got scoring chances, guys in scoring position, less than 2 outs, and it's a 1-run deficit or a tie game or a 2-run deficit, which in this game, you had multiple of those situations and they just didn't get it done. That situation specifically was Steven Okert.
Came in the game. Right. Yeah. He's you know, to his credit, he's nasty against lefties. So tough at bat, but still. And Gordo, we discussed before the game, that would have been such a good win. You had the Twins on fire. You're on the road. You're facing their ace. You have a bullpen game. If you could eke that one out, that would have been huge. So just overall frustrating from start to finish. Well, actually, top of the first was fun, but after that, just frustrating the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, that was the story of the game. Offense couldn't get it done. Their Twins back end of the bullpen had a really good series, really good first two games when they pitched. But moving
season,
to the third,
I would say that was the theme, is just runners on scoring position and unable to bring them on in.
Yeah, and to bring it all the way back to what Sammy said at the beginning of the show, if you're going to be not just leading the league, but if you're going to be at the top of the league and striking out, that's going to be a problem you're going to have. Because the only way to be consistent is to get the ball in play. But third game was a lot better than the first two. Cooper Criswell taking the hill. He was coming off back-to-back 5-inning scoreless outings. And He looked the part yet again. 4 1/3, one run. He loaded the he let up a homer to Jeffers. Ref Snyder tied it by driving in Duran. He ended up leaving hurt, but Cora says the hamstring's okay. But I thought Criswell's moment of the game, and honestly, this might just be the moment of the game. They ended up having a bunch of offense. They won 9-2, whatever. They hit the ball well later in the game. But the moment of the game was Cooper Criswell letting up some singles, loading the bases, no outs, and strikeout to a switch hitter, strikeout to a switch hitter, and then a little ground out to Criswell where he smartly did not try to turn around and throw the ball to first, flipped the ball to Reese, got the out by a mile at home plate. I thought he showed incredible poise. He continues to be such a valuable arm. I cannot believe that I ever doubted this guy in the offseason. Like, they signed him for a reason. He's been awesome. And this is a guy that, yes, they signed him to a one-year, $1 million deal, but it's like when they signed Renfro back in the day. He's under team control. Like, he's got his rookie deal, then he's going to have arbitration. Like, this is a guy who they've got, I believe, 5 years left of this guy if they can keep him throwing the ball the way he is. We'll talk about his role in a little bit, but I want to give you guys a chance to talk about that situation, because we talk about situational hitting, but situational pitching right there, that he got it done.
Yeah, that was a beautiful example of pitching. And what I mean by that is, when describing what the art of pitching is, it's all about disrupting timing. And Cooper Criswell is not a guy who's going to blow you away with high 90 stuff. His fastball sits 89, 90. So he's not doing that. And for him to just slice and dice his way out of a pretty much impossible to escape situation. And he was so calm too. It never looked like he was panicking. The play to end it, like you said, ground ball back to the pitcher. We've seen pitchers get nervous, get the yips almost when a ball gets back to them. A play that you think would be easy, they throw it away, do something that's inexplicable. He calmly picks it up, goes the shortest path to home plate, inning over. That was awesome to watch.
Yeah, I thought it was absolutely surreal, because it's one thing to go three perfect innings, take a no-hitter into the fourth against the San Francisco Giants, and then to come out in this situation. He's basically, from his time with the Red Sox, has been into almost every position you could think of as someone who's bounced as a starter and then to the bullpen, and now he's an opener. To see him go through all of this and work around it, it's like his stock is at an all-time high. And situation-wise, I know we'll get into it later, but I don't see how you can't go to this guy when you need it. You know, if there's a starter that goes down, he should be your opener or first guy off of there, or he should be this lengthy arm in the bullpen. I think Criswell has done it. Two starts have done it for me. I'm sold. I am sold on Cooper Criswell.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question then, because this is something I think this is an appropriate time to talk about this, because we have the rotation. Yes, it's kind of decimated right now, but we'll talk about it in the preview, but Pivetta is scheduled to make his next start against the Atlanta Braves this week. Brian Bello is scheduled for to throw four innings in a rehab assignment in Portland on Tuesday. Garrett Whitlock just threw a bullpen on Saturday. The date of his next bullpen is TBD, but when these guys start throwing bullpens, that means they're on the way back. All right, the Whitlock injury was not something they expected to be a super lengthy absence. I don't know when he's going to be back, but it's coming sooner rather than later. So let's roll through the rotation here in no order, because they've got Houck and Cutter, they've got Bello and Pivetta, and you've got Whitlock. Those are your five. Do either of you guys think Cooper Criswell should be in the rotation over any of those five? Yes or no, quickly.
No.
Okay, that's what I figured. Now with that, when they're all back, do you think Cooper Criswell should be in the bullpen, pitching games for the Red Sox, maybe multi-inning guy, maybe the Winkowski role, or should he go back to AAA and stay stretched out as a starter for when a guy goes down? I'm gonna say Sammy first.
Joe just said his answer. You want to go first?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Joe, I'm gonna say yes. I mean, not only from
yes to what?
I'm gonna say yes that he should be in the bullpen, and he should basically I it's also what I think is going to happen because of what we saw at the end of the game. We saw Winkowski warming up in the pen thinking, okay, he's going to come on. And then once the explosion of runs starts happening, then all of a sudden he's sitting down and they stick out with the bullpen and then they go to Jansen in the ninth. I ultimately think that Criswell has done enough where he knows what situations he's in, how to get out of them. I think we've seen enough from Winkowski he has sort of a shorter leash than Criswell. So I think if you're trusting someone to be at basically the first arm out of the pen, multi-inning, or if you need an opener whenever a starter goes down, you can put your confidence in Criswell that he can do it because he can shut it down. You can't say the same thing about Winkowski considering the past.
So Joe, would you then make Josh Winkowski the guy that you keep fully stretched out and you send him down? Would you do that then?
I would probably preserve Winkowski as best I could and send him down.
Okay. Sammy, where are you at on this?
I'm looking at this completely differently. I'm thinking Criswell in the Chase Anderson role. I don't like him in that Winkowski. Sometimes you're a late inning guy. Sometimes you're the starter. I think Criswell gives you the most value when he's going three or four innings. The most consistent way to do that is the Chase Anderson role. So that's what I'm doing with him. And with Anderson, I don't know what his options are. If you could sneak him through waivers or whatever, but if you lose him, I don't think it's a huge deal. You got guys in AAA like Alexander who could take over. Walter should be back fairly soon, if I'm not mistaken, but even without him, if he's not back, fairly confident in the options. Winkowski stretched out as well, like you guys have mentioned. So that's what I would do with him. I'd give him the kind of, as our friend Ed Hand calls Chase Anderson, the human victory cigar / human white flag, depending on situation. So that's the role I'd keep Cooper Criswell in. Keep him in that multi-inning role, whether it's in a blowout or a close game or somewhere in between.
Wow, this is interesting because I'm going to disagree with both of you guys. I think the most important, there's three roles you could put him in. There's the Wink role, which is like two-inning reliever in reasonable leverage. There's the Chase Anderson role, which is more innings but less leverage. And then there's the depth starter. To me, I think the depth starter is the most important of those three roles. You're not going to see him in big league games when all of the starting pitchers are healthy. But we've seen what happens when guys go down and you don't have anyone to step in and take that role. If he's in the Winkowski role, yes, he's on the roster, but he's not ready to go 75, 80 pitches. He went, I believe, 80 pitches on the dot today on Sunday in the third game. I want him ready to go because these pitchers have a history of going down. We've seen multiple of them go down this year. We have not seen Hauk or Cutter go down. That could happen. I want him fully stretched out. I want him starting games for this team. I think it would be a waste to have him in the Chase Anderson role. Like, those innings, for the most part, are eaten in games that are already decided. I know in game two he was throwing in a game that wasn't decided, but when the starters are all healthy, Chase Anderson's role is almost exclusively going to be for situations where the games are decided. So, yeah, I would option Criswell. I don't think it's fair. I think he's a big league pitcher, deserves to be in the bigs, but yeah, I think the most important role is making sure that the Red Sox always have a good starting pitcher going. And if you have six of those, you got a lot of flexibility. You could call them up if you've got a bunch of games in a row and you want to give guys a day off, push the rotation back a little bit. There's a lot of things you can do there. That is what I would be doing with Cooper Criswell.
What if you kind of adjusted the Anderson role a bit and made it more so it's higher leverage? You know what I mean? So it's not so much the white flag all the time. It's a situation kind of like how they've been using Slayton, kind of, sort of, where he comes in and pitches two innings and the leverage is generally fairly high. You could stretch that out, make it three or four innings instead. So then you're still using Criswell in important situations. He's giving you a lot of innings. And then you can even start to think about moving Slayton into that closer role too, if you take him out of that multi-inning role. I know that's a whole different conversation, but I think we all agree we don't think Kenley is too long for this team. So, you know, you put Criswell in a higher leverage role where he's giving you multiple innings and it bumps everyone back. And now all of a sudden you got open closer spot at the deadline. Maybe you don't know about Hendricks, August, he's thinking. So I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts. It's a great problem to have too many good pitchers.
Oh, God. I'm thrilled that this is the problem we're talking about. But I'll push back on you a little bit there, just because when you have a guy in that role, rarely do you see them get to the 75, 80 pitch marker. So when a guy goes down, he still wouldn't be stretched out. It would be more of a Winkowski situation where it's like, all right, he can go 50, which maybe gets you through three innings. And then it's not as consistent of a schedule either. I mean, I like that idea better than the current Chase Anderson role, but they have so many good pitchers. I just don't see the actual need for it. Like, they have good depth. They've got relievers that are going to be coming back. Like, we've all forgotten about Isaiah Campbell, but he's going to come back. Like, I just don't think it's necessary. Like, they could do it if they wanted to, but I just would rather have them fully stretched.
Well, what happens when the starters go into a stretch like last year, where they can barely get five innings out of them? Like, do you really? I understand the bullpen is much better than they are, but I personally would trust Criswell in that role immediately after the starter versus someone like a Winkowski.
Well, if the pitchers were struggling and they weren't showing that they could complete five innings every single day like they have been, like the real starters on this team have been going five plus every single time. So to me, that's not a concern until it is. Like, if that becomes the concern, like, that they had Whitlock in that role, I believe, was it 2 years ago? And then they put him in the rotation.
It feels like we're buying all the positives and selling all the negatives. Like, it's like, oh, I'm not concerned about the starting pitching going deep because we've seen them go deep for a few months. But like, we're not that far removed from 2023.
You can adjust it, Sammy. Like, if they start going like four innings, like they start, it's like 80, we're at 80 pitches through four. If that starts, like, you can call them back up and then you change the role there.
It's kind of, but you're kind of relying on an injury. You're stashing one of your guys who, based on how you're describing it, I think you would agree he's been one of your better pitchers. You're stashing him in AAA in case of an emergency. I don't know.
Yeah. Like, well, it would be different if you had a bad bullpen. Like, if you had like relievers with like 5.5 ERAs up there throwing meaningful innings because you're stashing Criswell in case of emergency, that's a problem. But they've all been so good. Like, Zach Kelly's going multiple innings and he looks great. Like, these guys don't need to be in AAA.
Yeah, but couldn't you say the same about Criswell? He doesn't need to be in AAA. It's tough, mate.
But none of these other guys go 80.
You want him in AAA so he stays stretched out.
Yeah. Oh, that's the thing, is I just think that role is more important. Like, in my eyes, it's a compliment to Criswell that I want him.
I feel like he could stay stretched out if he had the Chase Anderson role, and he'd be stretched out. He'd be available if you need him to start. Sometimes he'd get high leverage situations. Sometimes he wouldn't. I think that's fine. It doesn't always have to be a valuable. Well, let me back up. It doesn't always have to be high leverage for him. You could keep him in these low leverage situations to say, hey, I know we're up by six. You mind giving us these three, four innings? We want you to stay stretched out and we want the game to be done and save the bullpen, blah, blah, blah. But if you're up six,
can't you just trust Chase Anderson? Like,
no, I know you can. He can. It has nothing to do with Chase Anderson. I'm just saying, rather than sending down one of your better pitchers so he remains stretched out, keep him in a role in the majors where he can remain stretched out. And the negative to that is that, yeah, sometimes you're going to be using him in blowout games, whatever. But at least you always have him as an option.
But the negative is also that in that role, he is not going to be able to stay fully stretched out unless you're going to commit to him throwing bullpens after the games to then get his pitch count back up. But then you're committing to having a guy in the bullpen that's not available for 80% of your games.
Yeah, but
well,
I think
that's not going to be, if it's not going to be Criswell in that role, who else is going to be in that garbage time role outside of him or Chase Anderson?
You only need one.
I think
you only need Chase Anderson. And then eventually, like, Isaiah Campbell will come back. Like, the fact of the matter is the Red Sox have so many good relievers that there is going to be a pitcher that is way too good to be pitching in these situations who's pitching in these situations. Yet another good problem to have.
Gordo, I think the issue I have with your take is I feel like you're a little ahead on Cooper Criswell. Like, we're talking about he needs to be stretched out as if he's some top prospect. He's never shown that he's been five, six innings consistently. If he gives you three or four, when he starts and gives you three or four good innings, I think we're all pretty happy with it. So yes. I'm not as concerned with him being able to give you depth in a game. It's more like I'd rather him available in a pinch and not have to roster juggle when you need a spot starter. That's how I'm looking at it.
But that's the thing is, if you have him up there, you do have to juggle around when you need a starter. Because he's probably only going to be, if he's a bullpen guy, he's probably only going to be available for 40 or 50 pitches in his first start. So now, as soon as a guy goes down, you're either calling up Uwasawa, or maybe if Winkowski gets sent down and he gets stretched out, you're calling up one of those guys, or you're starting Criswell, who at this point can only throw potentially three innings, and now you're going to have to bullpen it the rest of the way.
I think I'd prefer that, though, because then you have him anytime you need him, and you know he can give you three, maybe four innings. I feel like that's a good trade-off. No? There's no wrong answer to this, is the good part.
Yeah.
You got a lot of, it's a weird situation for us.
One thing we never really like, we got into it a little bit with Joe's initial take, which is like, who would you send down? But the fact of the matter is, like, when guys like Campbell and Bayo and Pivetta and Whitlock, when these guys all come back, guys are going to have to get optioned. There's just like opening day, there's going to be good freaking pitchers in AAA. Like, we don't need to get into this roster crunch right now, because I think Pivetta is the only one who's imminently coming back by the time we next record. And I think it's a pretty safe assumption that Uwasawa is going to be the guy for that. But eventually, that's a conversation that we're going to have. It's a conversation that I'm sure they're going to have or are already having. It'll be interesting to see how they go about it. But also, rest of this game, unless you guys have anything else on this, we can get to the rest of the game real quick.
Yeah. Shohei just hit a 464-foot home run. I just had to throw that in.
That's okay. That's fine.
464.
I hit further homers in MLB The Show.
It's true. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah,
I'm in MLB Bigs.
Yeah, man.
Classic vintage game.
Yeah. Guys love the Bigs. Bigs, like, we all love MVP baseball, but if you're a little bit younger.
Who'd we talk to who said they played the Bigs? Was that Roman?
No, that was Cotillo.
Same guy.
Yeah.
It's like, which player? No, not a player.
Yeah, same guy.
While we're on it, he did graduate from my high school. He's only 2 years above me. So, fun factoid for you guys.
Who, Cotillo?
Yeah.
So, were you in school when he was breaking Velasco?
I was a freshman when he was a junior breaking the Rick Porcello trade from Arizona to Detroit.
So, what did you, like, try to talk to him about it? Like, what was your approach?
I mean, honestly, I let him do his thing. We had a camera crew for the local news come in one time. And I was working with our local cable station at the time. And they were like, oh, yeah, you can just follow him around, see what's going on. And so we literally just, like, ditched class, ditched That's lunch, sick. Just to follow Chris around while they profile him.
That's wild. I Shout can't imagine Cotillo. High school Chris Cotillo getting followed around by a camera crew. We'll have to ask him about that. But as for the rest of this game, the noteworthy stuff, I think, starts with the Reese McGuire stuff, where he gets on first, they try to pick off or something. They threw the ball away and he gets the second. And then he immediately, and in my opinion, inexplicably, tries to steal third. Should have been out by a mile, somehow slid in there. Cora after the game was like, yeah, oh my God, no. But he was safe, whatever.
Dude, he's an outstanding base runner. Not talking about speed, but just instincts and, like, decision making. Reese McGuire is sick. And I forget who it was.
I wouldn't have run there.
Somebody mentioned it. Hey, he was safe. Somebody mentioned it on opening day how he's, like, low key a great bunter and base runner, and he never gets credit for it. But, like, within the Red Sox clubhouse, everyone knows he's a great base runner and he can, like, do small ball stuff. I think he's really good. If he had speed, he'd be way more valuable. He doesn't. But I'm just talking about in terms of, like, decision-making, taking the extra base, catching guys off guard. Good at it.
Yeah, decision-making is key.
Thought he saw. Like, with the – like, he must have thought he had something on the pitcher to go there. I do wonder what he saw.
Remember a couple – last season, there was that – I think it was Toronto at Fenway, where it was a fly ball, and he was rounding third, and he was, like, halfway to home. And – we were still, I think we were debating, like, did the third base coach send him? Did he go on his own and just completely ignore the sign? So
that was the worst game of the year.
Yeah. So that's sort of where I fell off with Reese McGuire and his base running. Like you guys, I was literally hands on my head, like, what the fuck are you doing running to third? And sure enough, he made the swim move and luckily had a challenge help him out. But when Reese McGuire's on the base pass, I still don't trust him.
Well, what? in any event,
who's a better base runner than him? He's, I mean,
Durant,
this is
Jaren Duran.
Okay,
well, I would trust Duran.
Reese does a lot of
kicked off like three times this year.
But he can at least give you confidence if he's going to go attempt to steal a base like that. Yeah,
I'm not talking about who's the fastest guy on the team. I'm saying who's like a more intelligent base runner. Reese is like that's like he always gets that compliment. That's his thing. He's good at it. And bunting.
See, I know about the bunting. I've never heard about the base running, but that doesn't. I'm not saying it's not true. I'm just saying I can't.
I gotta figure out who said it. It was.
We gotta figure that out.
Analyst or like a coach was saying, and I'm pretty sure it was either opening day or the second game of the season on the NESN broadcast or radio. There was some diatribe about how he's such an underrated base runner decision wise, but he doesn't get the credit because he's a slow runner.
Well, in any event, whatever happened, as long as he didn't get out, it didn't matter. Because Sidon Rafaela got up, and it was another one of those situations where it's like, just get the bat on the ball, get the guy home. And he got the bat on the ball, and it went over the fence. And it was the first Red Sox homer since his homer off Colton Brewer on the previous Saturday. Like,
what?
They'd gone over a week without a home run as a team. That's how much the offense had scuffled.
That's why I never would have. I knew it's been a few games, but that feels like a long time ago. I almost wish that Rafaela had hit a single in that situation, because now I feel like he'll keep swinging out of his shoes. Be like, look, I hit a bomb. I'm going to keep doing this. It worked once. Not really, but I don't actually wish that, but you get my point.
Yeah, but by at that point, that
those
game...
are the swings. Yeah, those are the swings, though, that offense is going to go through when they're on fire. They're going to hit the ball out of the park one after another. When they're down and they're on a cold streak, they're in like an ice age cold streak where they don't have any home runs and they're barely mustering like five hits. That's you know, to the beginning of the program where Sammy says they're consistently inconsistent.
Yeah. I mean, that's just going to be what we see with the offense. Like, they have these games where they score 8, 9, 10, whatever runs, and then they have stretches where they go 3-4 games without scoring more than 2 or 3 runs. It's just going to be the way it is. But this game, it was 3-1. And at that point, you felt really good about it. Bernardino was really good again. Zach Kelly, really good again. Cam Boozer came in, got a really big third out of an inning with a guy on base in the tying run at the plate. And they pinch hit a righty for him. He came on for the lefty. They pinch hit a righty. He got the out. Really big by Boozer. And then after that, that's when the floodgates open. Yeah, Devers singled. O'Neill doubled. It was a weird throw by Margot mixed in there. Abreu comes up against the lefty, I might add, and works a walk. That's when Grissom comes up, hits the two-run double, pimps the shit out of it. Dom Smith comes up, hits a two-run double that Margot lost in the sun. He had an inning.
Yeah, that was not a good inning for Manuel Margot.
Yeah, he looked really bad in left. And he's known for his defense. And like, I get whatever, like, sun, I don't know. But he looked like shit out in left field. That was a great inning. It was really good to see Vaughn Grissom, though, put the bat on the ball. Clearly, he's a confident guy. This guy loves the bat flip. Like, I love everything about Vaughn Grissom. Dude, I'm so excited to keep watching him.
Smooth. That was so smooth. You can tell he's done it before. That was like an organic bat flip. Hit, flip, boom. Good for him, man.
Well, that's, those are the best ones. When you hit it and the flip is basically part of the swing.
Yeah. Swaggy, icy Vaughn Grissom. Also, by the way, super, super nice to Gordo and I in Fort Myers. So a guy
I love the guy. Going for. Yeah, I can't wait to see him. We haven't seen him at Fenway yet. We'll be back at Fenway Park, I believe, this weekend, maybe Sunday. So hopefully we can run into him then. Say
the
hi.
Old Nationals.
Friday or Sunday I can do. So
perfect.
See you there.
See you there, man. The interesting thing, though, is before this inning got going, because it was 7-1 after this inning was done, but before it got going, it was still 3-1. And it was interesting that Josh Winkowski, who eventually did still come into the game, but he was warming instead of Chris Martin. So it seemed as though Winkowski was going to have the eighth and a two-run lead. After the game, it seems like Chris Martin might be a candidate for the IL. He has lingering soreness in his left shoulder, so it's not his throwing shoulder, but the Sox are concerned the injury will alter his mechanics and lead to issues with his right arm, which... Right. It's not an exact comparison, but I'll do it anyway. Porzingis in the Celtics game tweaked his ankle, kept playing on it, and like 2 minutes later, screwed up his calf on the other side because he's favoring it. So
it's a good example.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe there's something like that. Hopefully Chris Martin can avoid the IL, but yeah, it's a real thing.
Gordo, it's also worth pointing out that this is the second time he's dealt with this year, and he's 38 years old, so better to tread lightly with something like this. So
That's where the transition might need to happen, where you need to find someone else in that role. You might need someone else to take over for Martin.
I still like Martin. He's had two bad outings all year. We were talking about if we were worried a couple podcasts ago. He's had three outings this year where he's let in a run. Two of them he let in three. One of them he let in one, and the rest have been pretty clean. Last year, he hit the IL at one point. He wasn't pitching that well to start the year. They put him on the IL, gave him some time. He came back and was lights out literally the rest of the season. Hopefully, right. Something like that can happen this time around. I don't know if it's an IL stint or just sitting him down for a few days. Hopefully, it can just be like a take advantage of the two off days and maybe avoid the IL, but we'll see. A little nervous about it. But again, we've talked about how deep this bullpen is. Like they've got the bullpen to cover for a guy like Chris Martin going down if he needs a quick 10-day stint. I don't think it would be a long stint.
Do you guys have any updates on Campbell? I haven't heard anything.
There was something maybe 5 days ago that said he was doing better, but I don't think it was like on track for necessarily a rehab assignment super soon.
Yeah.
But it seemed like he's doing well.
Yeah, I feel like he's pretty important because really the only lefty I feel confident in right now is Bernardino. And I know Campbell has reverse splits, so he kind of like operates as if he's a lefty, though he throws right-handed. Boozer, I like. Good story. I'm not supremely confident yet.
Boozer's like he's solid right now, but it's not like, like Bernardino comes in and it's like, okay, we're going to get right through this.
Yeah, yeah. And no more Joely. Way to go, Red Sox. No more Joely. So you really only, it's pretty much Bernardino is the only guy who gets lefties out consistently from the pen that I'm like, oh, we're good. So, Campbell, the righty who gets out lefties, would be good when he's back.
Yep. Sox win this game 9-2. There was a 2-run Devers bomb at the end. It was good to see him crush one. Joe picked them for Crystal Bomb. But speaking of that,
I'm coming for you, fellas. I'm coming.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see, Joe.
You're already ahead of me, aren't you? I've only gotten one. Is this your second or first?
That's his first.
Okay, so you're already tied with. I suck at this.
One for one.
Yeah, he's batting 1,000. We'll see. We'll see if that can continue. Because
Ted Williams.
There's no Tristan Casas to give you another one this time. So we'll see who he picks.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Well, let's get into the series preview. It's just a 2-game one here with the Braves. They're off Monday and off Thursday, but in between those days, you got a little 2-game series with the Braves. Game one, Cutter Crawford versus Ronaldo Lopez, one of their free agent moves this offseason. Former reliever turned starter, and he's looked really good. He's got a 1.5 ERA this year as a starter. Coming off 5 innings, 3 earned, 7 strikeouts against Seattle. Cutter Crawford, obviously been one of the best pitchers in baseball, 1.56 ERA. Coming off one of his better starts of the year, first time hitting 7 innings in his career. He went 7 innings, 2 earned, 6 strikeouts against the Giants. And then in game two, the return of Nick Pivetta, it's believed. It's not announced, but it's believed that Nick Pivetta will go game two. He has an 0.82 ERA and 11 innings pitched this year. So obviously brief, just a couple of starts before he hit the injured list. His rehab start, he went 3 innings, 4 runs, 5 strikeouts, 4 walks in AAA. He attributed a lot of that to the IBS, the automatic or ABS automatic ball strike system that he hated. He says he hopes it never comes to Major League Baseball. We'll see. He's going against Chris Sale. The return of Chris Sale. Sale has a 3.44 ERA. He's coming off 5 innings, 1 run, 9 strikeouts against Seattle. So yes, that is right. We are about to see Chris Sale pitch against the Boston Red Sox. Hitters for the Braves. Every single one of their hitters is good. However, a bunch of them are not having seasons, at least up to their standard. Acuna, Riley, Olsen, Michael Harris are all underperforming. Ozzie Albies has been fine. Marcelo Zuna, kind of the only hitter on their team, having a great season. Might see some Adam Duvall in the series. It'd be interesting to see him again. He split some time with Jared Kelnick, so we'll see about that. Sean Murphy, who crushed the Sox in spring training when Sammy and I were there, he is on the injured list, so you will not see him. Last 7 days, Ronald Acuna has a 909 OPS. Austin Riley has an 842 OPS, so they have looked better over the last seven. But as for the rest of the team, nobody else on the Braves over the last 7 days has a 559 OPS. That doesn't include Sunday, by the way. They're still playing their game as we record this. But yeah, everyone else on the Braves besides Riley and Acuna, pretty cold right now. So we'll get into these series predictions. None of us got it right for the last series. I got to get the score in front of me. So Sammy, if you want to give your series prediction, I'll pull up the scoreboard and I'll let you know in a sec.
Okay. For this one, I think they split. I think the Red Sox win the first game, and I think the second game is going to be pain. Chris Sale revenge game. Red Sox have not hit lefties well. I know they have Grissom and Cooper now, in addition to O'Neill, so there's a little bit more of some right-handed thump, but still, it's friggin' Chris Sale, and he's pitched well, and he's going to be very, very motivated. And if you are a Red Sox fan and you boo Chris Sale, I hate you with every fiber of my being.
It's in Atlanta, though.
Yeah. I'm saying if you're like a Red Sox fan and you're like,
oh, in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Or are you saying on Twitter? Do you think there's going to be people on Twitter?
Oh, yeah.
Like, no, more people on Twitter at now would rather him come back than get rid of him.
There's people who don't like him. He was always hurt. He wasted money. And like Red Sox pack Atlanta. I figure it's going to be half Red Sox fans there. It normally is.
Really? They travel
well. Yeah, all the Red Sox fans who like live in like northern Florida will like go up north. And dude, Red Sox fans should be supporting Chris Sale, in my humble opinion.
I hope they do. I think they will. I don't think there's going to be too many people. I know that fans kind of do this, but I don't think there's going to be that many people rehashing the bad because he's been healthy and he's been good. I think there's going to be a lot more, as Joe was saying, people being like, oh, why'd we trade him?
Boston fans? I don't know. I feel like a lot more people are going to be like, oh, he's fucking... Like, when they see him pitching against the Red Sox in Atlanta, they'll be like, oh, of course he's pitching well. He was always hurt here. This guy's a waste of money. Fuck you, buddy. I feel like it's going to happen. And there's going to be Red Sox fans there, and they're going to be like, boo, and they're going to show them on the field and be like, oh, Red Sox fans here in Atlanta aren't seeming to like Chris Sale. Gross.
I don't agree with you, Sammy. We'll see. We'll see what happens. I hope Chris Sale gets to pitch at Fenway Park later this year, too, because then we'll definitely get like a real Red Sox fan vibe check on that.
And they come to Fenway, right?
Yeah.
We talked about this yesterday. Yeah, because that's why it's a two-game series. They do both.
Yep. All right, Joe, what do you got?
I like Sammy. Believe that Chris Sale should be applauded for what he did in his Red Sox career. He should not get booed at all. But if Sammy thinks it's going to be ugly, I think it's going to be uglier. I'm calling this a two-game sweep of Atlanta. They are just too damn good. They're, for me, the best team in baseball. They were at the beginning. They will be until someone proves me wrong or the Dodgers beat them. They just have too many weapons, way too many weapons. I mean, you could go down the list of their roster, their bullpen, their rotation, and you might need to go through like six or seven guys before you point out the best player on the Red Sox in that category. I don't think it's going to be pretty. It's going to be a two-game sweep. I think they'll at least keep it competitive for maybe, you know, in game one, they'll probably keep it 60% competitive, but I think Atlanta just has too much firepower. And then same thing in game two, Nick Pivetta coming back. He might be a little bit rusty. Chris Sale's looked really, really good in his first couple of starts with Atlanta. So I'm calling for a two-game sweep. Atlanta gets over Boston.
Joe, the negative one. I'm going to stick with one
being a realist,
bro.
I'm
going to go one out of two, but I'm going to go opposite of what... By the way, Pat says one out of two as well. He had the same order as Sammy, so he thinks they go win-loss. I'm going to say they go loss win. I think they're going to underestimate Ronaldo Lopez. I think he's going to pitch really well. And then Chris Sale is going to come on the mound. And we have seen Chris Sale in some big games, not necessarily be like he wants to be great, but we've not always seen the best from Chris Sale in the biggest games. So I'm going to say the Sox take the game from Sale. I think Nick Pivetta comes back and is good. Braves, that game just went final. They lost 11-2. They are on a three-game losing streak, have lost 6 of their last 10. They are 20-12 for the season, but as we saw with the Twins, they caught the Twins at the wrong time. I think they're catching the Braves at the right time. I think they can get one from them. Pat is not here to announce the crystal bomb, so I'm going to do it. It's time for crystal bomb. Bomb it. To recap, not very many homers were hit in this series. It was just Devers and Rafaela. No one had Rafaela. Joe had Devers, so Joe was on the board. So Joe, actually, I'll read Pat's pick. Pat for this week is picking Vaughn Grissom to go deep. I think that's an interesting pick. Revenge game for Grissom. So Pat, I think you're smart there. That's a good pick. Joe, who you got?
Devers, obviously. I think, you know, these first couple of picks, I just need to get on the board. And I think as reliable as Rafi Devers is, I think Tyler O'Neill is just as reliable. So I'll take 3% body fat Tyler O'Neill to go deep.
All right, Sammy, who you got?
Man, I got no clue. I suck at this. I'll go. It's in Atlanta. I don't know. Gordo, who are you picking? Who are you picking? I need to hear your guys' reasoning. I'm so bad at this. I have one correct pick all season long.
God. You want to hear my pick? I'll give you my pick.
Yeah, you go.
All right, I'm taking Connor Wong. He did not play on Sunday, so I do anticipate him playing both these games. There's a lefty on the mound in Sale that Connor Wong has caught. Connor Wong knows what these pitches look like. Give me Connor Wong to take Chris Sale deep in game 2.
Ooh, the old catcher hitting one off his pitcher.
Yep.
All right. Okay, so I can't pick Willier.
And I can't pick Cooper.
Devers.
Can't pick Cooper.
Oh, Cooper, right. Okay, fuck. I'll go Rafi. Give me Rafi. He's hot. Just hit a home run, making hard contact. I need to get on the board. Third time I'm going to pick Devers this year. I have.
Actually, you got to make it happen.
Who's the one I got? Ocasas in Pittsburgh. Sorry. And then he got hurt.
And that's when everyone got their pick, right?
Yeah.
No, that was the one I missed. Everyone else got it but me. I think I might have picked like Durant or something. I don't know. But here's a score update. Series predictions. Sammy's got 6. Pat's got 4. I've got 1. Crystal Bomb. I've got 6. Pat has 3. Sammy has 1. And Joe has 1 now as well. Sammy, before we get to enough said, it's time for an important segment. What do we got?
Bro, it's time for guys being dudes.
Yeah, bro.
Yes, Joe getting in the mix. All right, Chads. So this episode, we're doing Red Sox / Braves players. And I'm going to make a rule. Where's my rule? No Chris Sale. You can't pick Chris Sale. That's lame.
Yeah, we just talked about Chris Sale. Not allowed to pick
original.
Chris Sale.
You can't pick him. Gordo, since you've done this before, you go first. Joe, you have done this. So yeah. what you want to go?
Sure, I'll go first. Well, first, I'll read Pat's. Pat has Eric Hinsky, which I am fully behind. Loved Eric Hinsky during that 2007 run. But I'll go for someone who maybe had the most underrated hit of the 2018 season. They were very, very short stints with both Atlanta and the Sox. Brandon Phillips. You guys remember that grand slam down in Atlanta? I'm pretty sure he's with Atlanta and Boston in the same year. And the very first at-bat, one of the first at-bats with the Sox, he launches this thing out to left field. I think he was the very first Red Sox player to wear number 0 in the ball club's history. So he's memorable just for that swing. Brandon Phillips, the longtime Red, but also had pit stops in Atlanta and Boston.
Talk about a bat flip. That was sick. He just kind of leaned back like, ooh, I got all of that one. That was, even better.
You know what? For when we get to episode 100, because there's no episode 0. When we get to episode 100, we'll make that the Brandon Phillips episode.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right, Gordo, who you got? By the way, also, No Craig Kimbrell. That's also kind of lame.
Why? Why no Craig Kimbrell?
It's so obvious. The whole point is to be obscure, like Eric Hinsky or Brandon Phillips, who barely played for the Red Sox. You gotta be weird. David Ardsma, even though we already did Ardsma, you can't do him, but he would have been great.
I like to have like notes to talk about. Like that's the thing, is like I like obscurity, but you also gotta have like, you can't just have the name and that's it, and then there's nothing else to it.
Yeah, we do. But, we always do. Were you gonna pick Kimbrell?
I was gonna pick Kimbrell. I have another one though. I won't pick him. I'll go with Derek Lowe.
Nice.
Derek Lowe, that's a good one. That's good.
Did he leave the Red Sox directly for the Braves? Do I have that right? Threw a no-hitter with the Red Sox. He's one of the first Red Sox starting pitchers that I can like he was in that first rotation of guys that I can remember as a fan. Classic 04 guy. Love Derek Lowe. I was like weirdly very upset. And I shouldn't say weirdly. I was very upset as a kid when he left. I was like more upset when Derek Lowe left than when they traded Nomar. So, viva Derek Lowe.
That's a good one. Yeah.
He went to the Dodgers after the Sox. He went right. Sox, Dodgers, Braves.
Sox, Dodgers, Braves. Okay. Let's recount the teams that Derek Lowe played for. Because he started in Seattle, was part of the Veritek trade, gets to the Red Sox, two-time All-Star with the Red Sox. Few seasons with the Dodgers, 4 years it looks like, then the Braves, and then people don't remember at the end, but he was pitching out the bullpen with... Actually, no, he started for Cleveland. Then he pitched out of the bullpen for the Yankees. And then the Rangers, I don't remember at all. I don't remember the Derek Lowe Rangers era at all.
I remember Derek Lowe on the Rangers because they had a pitcher a few years afterwards named Mark Lowe. And I remember thinking, oh, wow, too low.
Mark Lowe was okay. Mark Lowe was solid.
Yeah, he was no Derek Lowe.
No, God, no. Come on. Derek Lowe.
How many are Derek Lowe?
All right. I got a really, really, really obscure one with one fun fact. Do you gentlemen remember right-handed pitcher Anthony Varvaro?
Ooh, may he rest in peace.
Oh. What?
Yeah, he died a couple years ago.
No. Are you serious?
The guy who retired to be a police officer, right?
He died?
I'm pretty sure he died. I hope I'm wrong. But if I am wrong, I'd feel like a jerk.
Did he really? No, he didn't.
Yeah, he
oh
died.
Oh my God, he did. 22. What the fuck? All right. Well, that's not a. That's a rain cloud depressing. Who guys being dude? He died.
You were excited what? About that pick.
I was so excited to tell you guys that he's a cop now, and now you're like, oh, he's dead.
Yeah.
Oh my God,
well, he was a cop.
When did he okay, hold on. What age? Because I remember like I was pretty excited about him as a Red Sox.
He was 25 years old when he debuted with the Mariners in 2010. When he got to the Red Sox, it was 2015. He was 30. He did okay, but he only pitched 11 innings. 4.19, 108 ERA plus. I'm shocked. I swear to God, I didn't know this.
I remember at the time, I mean, the Red Sox got this guy and he was coming off two straight years of sub three ERAs with the Braves. I was like, okay, here we go. And he just basically never got out of the minors. And
oh my God.
Well, actually it looks like maybe 15, he might've been hurt, but 16, he was in the minors. And it looks like if I remember correctly, he left during the season in 16 to become a cop.
Well, shit. That's not a good guy's being. All right, fine. I'll switch to old reliable Alexi Ogando. Who pitched for both the Red Sox and the Braves. Let's see how old Alexi did with the Braves. He was okay. 32 innings, 3.94 ERA, 106 ERA plus. So Alexi going from depressing pick to beloved. Alexi Ogando, Gordo's favorite player ever.
Absolutely. We got to figure out a way to get Alexi Ogando involved with this show. I think that might be my goal for like, as soon as the off season hits, we have to figure out how to get in touch with Alexi Ogando and make him like send us a video or something. I don't know
what the thing is. It's got a big.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We got it. If we ever get to talk to Alexi Ogando, we got to figure that out.
What's the thing?
What is that thing?
What is it? Can we?
Just let us in. We don't have to put it on the show. Just tell us.
Off the record.
Man, I'm still not over that pitcher passed away. That's like,
yeah,
What the fuck? What are the?
I mean, it's still relatively recent. Yeah. It was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. In 2022, I'm looking now. I can't. Of course, I picked the one guy who's not alive anymore. Great. Great work, Sammy. Good research, you asshole.
All right. Shall we move to Nuff Said?
Let's do it.
All right. I'll go first. Shout out to us. And by us, I mean all of Boston sports fans for the couple of weeks we have ahead of us. With the Bruins winning game 7 and the Celtics moved on, or they beat the Heat a few days ago. But this is the schedule beginning Monday. You ready for this? And this isn't even including the Red Sox. The Red Sox have games on most of these days as well. Monday, Bruins game 1. Tuesday, Celtics game 1. Wednesday, Bruins game 2. Thursday, Celtics game 2. Friday, Bruins game 3. Saturday, Celtics game 3. Sunday, Bruins game 4. Monday, Celtics game 4. Tuesday, Bruins game 5. Wednesday, Celtics game 5. Thursday, no playoff games. Friday, Celtics and Bruins both play game 6. Saturday, nothing. Sunday, Celtics and Bruins both play game 7. Obviously, if they advance or get bounced early, some of those games won't happen, but we've got a couple weeks ahead of us.
As this Jim Harbaugh would say, who's got it better than us? Nobody.
And Devers Enjoyer, I don't know if I agree with you this time, man, because
we've got a pretty worse good. Than us. That guy is so fucking funny.
He tweeted today that he like tore his ACL in his sleep. Who's got it worse than me? And I was like crying. I'm sorry if you did actually tear your ACL, Devers Enjoyer, but that was funny as hell.
Devers Enjoyer.
I've never heard of that significant injury in someone's sleep.
If your leg gets caught under you and you roll over, it could happen.
Oh,
you sleep with your leg bent and then you roll the wrong way. Like you roll towards the leg and it gets caught.
It's like a modified version of telling me to sleep with one eye open.
Sleep with one leg, sleep with both legs straight or you'll tear your ACL.
All you got to do is handcuff the limbs to the bed and you won't tear your ACL. That's the rule.
Yep. Jeez.
Weird, freaky shit. Jeez.
Freaky shit. Kinky. All right. So I actually haven't had a chance to talk to you guys about this since I was not able to join big episode 69. The Miami Heat crowd in game 5 of the NBA playoffs. That was the most embarrassing playoff crowd I've ever seen in any American sport ever. Holy shit. I don't want to hear a word about traffic. There were plenty of Celtics fans in the building. That was embarrassing for Heat culture. And then, of course, the fans quit on the team with good reason. They got whooped, lost by, 32 points? So, yeah, 34? I don't know. 36.
Their fan base sucks. Their fan base is absolutely terrible.
Miami sports in general.
I don't like to generalize a whole fan base, but based on social media, that does seem like one of the most annoying neckbeard online fan bases I have ever, like, it's so weird.
Sammy, like, don't forget that, remember the Ray Allen shot in game 6 of that NBA finals? Like, the Heat fans had all left the arena, and when he hit the shot, they were all trying to come back in. But guess what? When you leave, you can't come back. Like, that was a thing back then. It's been a thing for years with these fans. They absolutely suck. I'll generalize it, man. They suck. They're terrible.
It's the traffic, Gordo. It's the traffic. They didn't think about the traffic before. They've had the traffic forever, but they can't plan for the traffic. Amazing.
I mean, would you rather be like on the beach in Miami or in an arena, like watching sports?
Gotta be a loyal fan, Joe. Be a loyal fan, Joe.
Well, that you're talking to like reasonable sports fans among the three of us. Talk to like a standard person who lives in Miami, Florida, like born and raised, and they'll say,
"Those
standard
people are bad fans.
They're not good fans. Then they just suck." You can go to the beach any day. How often is your team in the playoffs? Like maybe at best once a year. And if you're lucky enough to get tickets, you should be there. It's just a loser friggin' group of fucking let's go Sox, honestly.
Pretty much.
So you got anything for us?
I do. I want to tie it back to baseball. The umpire epidemic continues to be a problem. I don't know if y'all saw yesterday, but Aaron Judge got his first career ejection. Literally, you could count to 800 and he wouldn't have said anything and the umpire still ejected him. Aaron Judge is one of the nicest guys in baseball. And if he's getting ejected, something is wrong. And I've seen conspiracy theorists say that, oh, the umpires are only bad so that people can get excited for robot umpires. I don't believe that crap.
No.
I do believe that there is a real issue going on with umpires. That's just, I'm going to shout it to the heavens. Not that we already knew that, but if Aaron Judge is getting tossed out of baseball games, there's a big issue going on.
Okay, Joe, I have a response to this. First of all, to say that umpires are being bad on purpose to get people excited about that, that is
that's
one of the
nutty,
dumbest.
That's nutty behavior.
It's bogus. Yeah, absolutely bogus.
That is saying that someone is being bad at their job intentionally so that you can get excited for when their job is obsolete. You don't have to see them. Why would that benefit? Makes no sense. Anyway, here's my theory on why I think umps are allegedly worse than ever. Every single team, every single broadcast has the K zone. So we're much more aware of balls and strikes. On top of that, there's the, what's it called? The ump scorecard thing that they do every single game. You see the average percentage compared how that ump did that night, blah, 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 blah. And on top of that, now you have the looming robot umps coming. So you have those three things, the K zone on the broadcast, the added data online, and then the pressure of robot umps. I think that with more data, we're just able to see the same mistakes that umps have always been making. So it's not like they've gotten worse. It's just we have more of an ability to see it. And then the stuff with Aaron Judge, like you just spoke about, I think that's them just being under pressure and being pressed, being like, crap, fuck, we're going to get replaced. Everyone is aware of our success rate. We can't hide stuff anymore. There's the challenge system, so we have to admit when we're wrong sometimes. And everything is going against the umps right now. So I think they're just a little bit on edge. And that would be my most educated guess on why it feels like umps are worse than ever, because I certainly agree. That's definitely how it feels. Is it true? Hard to say.
I will say one thing on this. I think all these conspiracy theories are bogus as well, but there is one theory I do subscribe to. I think the league, everyone always wonders, and Angel Hernandez is relevant because he was calling balls and strikes in the third game. Honestly, didn't do that bad of a job.
Yeah, he was fine.
Maybe it's because I have such low expectations for him. Like, he wasn't perfect or anything, but he was fine. I do think that they are purposely not firing him because having the conversation around him benefits the league. I think there's a benefit to having people talk about it. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think that he should be umpiring important games. I know they kept him out of World Series games because he hasn't been good. Probably a good call there, but I think there's a reason he's still around. As for the Judge thing, I don't know. I'm having a shitty day. I don't know. Fuck, I don't know. But yeah, that was a really bogus ejection. Judge didn't say shit. That was fucked up.
I don't know. I thought Judge deserved it.
Yeah, you're right. He did. They all deserve it. Boone also deserved that ejection the other week, right? Boone deserved that.
Yeah, the fan said something.
Yeah, Boone deserved that.
Boone needs to control the situation. And he
You're the leader of the team and thus the leader of the fan base.
Hey, so you fan, gotta keep shut up. Shut up there.
Can you imagine if Boone turned around and went, shut the fuck up to the fan? That would have been awesome.
He should have done it. Then maybe he wouldn't have gotten tossed.
He really does seem like a good guy, jokes aside.
Yeah, he seems fine.
He's pretty cool. Fuck him, though.
Yeah, fuck him.
Nice guy, but fuck him.
Yeah, but fuck him.
Yeah, sucks.
Anything else before we wrap this baby up?
No. Bruins, you say, are Bruins tomorrow, Celtics Tuesday?
Bruins Monday, if you're listening on drop day, tonight. Yeah.
And yes, Bruins fans, give credit to Hampus Lindholm for that pass that set up Pasta. Pasta wasn't the only hero last night.
That was beautiful.
It took a year, but Hampus Lindholm is finally cooking. Yeah, dude, sometimes when the Red Sox have an off day, I feel like I'm progressing through that entire day. It's like I'm naked in front of a crowd of people because I don't have anything to think about for that the following hours. But with the Bruins and Celtics and Boston sports just being good as fuck, I'll have stuff to think about, and I won't feel naked.
Yeah, the Red Sox couldn't have picked a better week to have multiple off days with us having playoff games to watch every single night. So appreciate the Sox, appreciate the Celtics, appreciate the Bruins. Good times, man. But for this one, this has been episode 70 of Play Tessie. We appreciate you guys tuning in before you tune into something else. Remember to hit that subscribe button. Apple, Spotify, Odyssey app, wherever you're listening, hit the subscribe button and rate us 5 stars. Check us out on YouTube if you haven't already. We are on the WEI YouTube channel. So check us out there. We've got our own playlist. You can hit the thumbs up on the video. That helps us out a ton. Leave us a comment. Tell us how you're feeling about the Red Sox. Tell us how you're feeling about the Red Sox facing Chris Sale coming soon. That's going to be really interesting. I cannot wait for that game. So tell us what you think of that start for Chris Sale upcoming. Follow us on the socials at PlayTessie on both Twitter and Instagram. We continue to drop awesome content on those platforms every single day. Content with the players, both present players, players from the future. We drop great content from the show. The social platforms, you're missing out if you are not following PlayTessie on Twitter and Instagram. But till next time, till episode 71, till the post-Brave series podcast, we appreciate you guys tuning in. For Sammy and Joe today, it's Gordo. Thanks for tuning in to PlayTessie episode 70. Toodaloo.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly.